It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theriot and Richard Campbell are here. We have been covering the Microsoft Build Conference, did the keynote yesterday, the keynote today. Paul and Richard's thoughts about Microsoft's huge push into AI, AI everywhere, coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theriot and Richard Campbell. This is episode 830, recorded Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. Windows is my co-pilot. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Lookout. Whether on a device or in the cloud, your business data is always on the move. Minimize risk, increase visibility, and ensure compliance with Lookout's unified platform. Visit lookout.com today. And by Miro. Miro is your team's online workspace to connect, collaborate, and create together. Tap into a way to map processes, systems, and plans with the whole team. Get your first three boards for free to start creating your best work yet at Miro.com/podcast. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft, and it just so happens Microsoft Build is going on right now, and so there is a little bit of news. Hello, Paul Theriot from Theriot.com. Hello to Richard Campbell of Run As Radio. Both Paul and Richard have been with me all morning as we watch day two of the keynote. We watched Panos Panay get screwed, basically.
That's a theory.
Yeah, it's a speculation.
So let's get the gossip out of the way, then we'll get to the content.
What happened? I mean, you can find the news anywhere. Here's some speculation. you know, Microsoft reaches out to journalists and bloggers and whatnot ahead of the show and says, hey, here's, you know, will you agree to an embargo? And yeah, of course. And then a few days later, they said, hey, actually, there's going to be two embargoes. There's going to be one on day one on Tuesday. And then there's going to be a separate one specifically for Windows, was how they phrased it, for Wednesday. Okay, cool. And then, you see the show sessions appear and you can see what's going on. You can see there's a keynote on both days, which they typically do for Build. And then right at the line, and I Twit contacted us, hey, do you guys want to be, appear live and cover the events? And I sort of felt like I wouldn't have much to offer for the first day AI type cloud stuff. And Richard obviously does. So he did that. And then we all did today's thing, which was really Microsoft 365. But right before the event, Microsoft contacted everyone and said, hey, change of plans. There's still going to be two keynotes, but all of the embargoes will be at one time on Tuesday, not Wednesday. So we're going to announce all of the Windows stuff on Tuesday, not Wednesday too. Okay. So I contacted Leo and I said, I don't know if this changes anything, and we kind of agreed that it didn't. And so whatever.
I'm actually glad we did both days. They were both very different in content.
Right.
But it looks like Panos basically ended up recapping day one.
Panos's talk was so awful, and it was literally a recap of what they already talked about in the day one keynote about Windows. That's what it was. And he even played the same exact videos. I thought, maybe my gut feeling was, and before we saw the shows, was there was more material than they could do. And so they said, look, we'll just announce it and then they'll provide more detail on day two. And they absolutely did not. Very end when Stephen Gatish came out.
Yeah.
We never and so, in that sense, we don't know this for a fact, but it does really feel like he got kind of screwed over and we don't know why, but they decided that they were going to do all this news. Maybe they felt there would be no news cycle on day two, right? That from the mainstream media type approach.
Yeah, they're one shot.
Microsoft has Apple, Tuesday. Google do a big, it's a marketing keynote is what it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe they were like, look, we got to ride that train. And if we don't, no one's going to pay attention to the stuff we're doing with Windows.
Well, let's start with Tuesday. Because you were saying, Richard, that's the best keynote you've seen in a long time.
For a dev show, definitely. Because it was focused.
Satya Nadella came out in a hoodie, believe it or not, and was prancing around the stage with lots of energy, did not kind of devolve into his normal corporate speak, but really, I think, positioned the whole show as, look, we're going to show you Copilot. We've got 50 plus announcements to talk about with Copilot. I'm going to tell you about five. It is going to be an AI show. And I think he did a good job of that. Was on and off very quickly. Got the job done. It was not the usual corporate boring speech.
It certainly didn't drag on. I mean, I'm afraid Kevin Scott, who we don't normally see on
stage. I've never seen him on stage.
That's very rare. And he went over. There was supposed to be a 30-minute break in that keynote.
Oh, right.
And he was 25
between the first
over.
Part and Scott Goo's part, right?
They basically absorbed the entire.
Well, that explains it, because it felt like after the
he rambled,
and then all of a sudden, and let's show you some code. It was a very odd kind of
that's right.
Jump into code.
Well, that's how they usually split it up. Usually, the second half is coding, whatever it is, right? It's usually code, and it felt like one giant thing. Today's went over too, by the way, right? On the schedule, today was supposed to end by 40 minutes ago, 1:30 my time. And it went right up to 10 of. I mean, it went over by 20 minutes.
Interesting.
Yeah, which makes you wonder if they couldn't have just shortened up Panos's piece and then thank you very much. I mean, hope you saw the great announcement. Let me bring out the stuff, right?
Like, yeah.
I know you're supposed to do 15, but like, let it go. Like, I've been involved in keynotes like that where, you practiced 9 minutes and then day of when you went to go on stage, you said, you get six.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's just sort of reality. So as much as I appreciate both sets of keynotes had clear themes. And that is, again, Microsoft makes too many things. It is very strange for them to be this clear.
Right.
I don't know why they were so slack on time.
They had a real story to tell this time. And the story, of course, is AI everywhere. Mm-hmm. What's great for them is this is especially for the developer, a story that no one else, especially Linux, which has been really challenging, can offer this kind of development environment for AI.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you could use Visual Studio Code on Linux, I guess. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff would work on Linux, but that is all coming from Microsoft. And Microsoft makes, they've been doing this for years, but they make a pretty good case for Windows being the best dev environment. I mean, we can argue that point. I don't mean fight me. I mean, I'm just saying they make a case for it. I'm quite taken because I was, of course, looking for, I'm a client guy, right? So I'm looking for any hint of Windows 12 it's funny to me. I didn't catch it at the end, but Leo kind of caught it, which was this notion that the Copilot, which we've all agreed is such a great brand, is in some ways, not really, but in some ways is almost like a temporary holding pattern kind of thing because it can integrate with what we have today. Right. The real future is where AI is just infused inside everything, right? So for today, we're going to use it as connecting glue or whatever. And you'll have this Copilot, this thing that's literally, from a UI perspective, something sitting on the side, a sidebar.
And this is what Stevie said so eloquently, right? Yeah. It's either beside, inside, or outside.
Yeah.
And the everything's inside part, been beside so far.
Yeah, the inside part is you can see it in apps that have AI capabilities built in. You can see it in the Windows Studio Effects, which only works today on our machines, where you have an app that can do AI things, with a video and whatnot. And then the outside part is that, and Leo, again, kind of hit on this, on the previous recording, which was this thing that in our space, the Microsoft world has dates back to early 90s, Olay, Com Plus, DCOM, et cetera. And now we see it in Loop, this kind of notion of,
document-centric.
Richard mentioned being a DOS developer and the magic of copy and paste between applications, right? In a kind of a single tasking, system like MS-DOS where you run an app and the app takes over.
Yeah. Remember
system.
When a miracle TSR apps were terminant, stay resident.
Yep. This has been
sidekick.
Yeah. It's like we're going to apply this dream that we've had since the early 80s to the internet, into disparate heterogeneous systems. And it's very interesting. So
turned out the thing we were missing all along. In this, this world where you are document centric and you combine data and capabilities from all over the place, including the internet, was AI. That's the tool, the glue that makes this possible, right?
That's right. Because the internet gives us all of the data in the world, right?
Yeah.
But making sense of it is the trick.
Well, and getting the other problem you've got in the GUI, like the GUI's now mature, right? We've had it for 30, 40 years. You know, arguably they're talking about showing the first mouse movements in 50 years ago.
But really 1983-ish or whatever, right?
But all GUIs suffer from the same problem now, which is there's too much stuff, right? It's completely overloaded. So the idea, rather than clean up our interfaces and actually make them nice again, because that would be hard work, it's let's stick on a new layer where I don't need to know what all that stuff is anymore. All I have to do is describe my problem to this piece of software, and it goes and pulls up the respective apps and tools necessary to get the work done. Like you're eliminating the GUI effectively because you're just describing your tasks and it's deciding. You know, the fun part now is going to be the backroom battles about which app it decides to send you to to do the work.
No, it's true.
That's where Loop really shines.
I always draw this parallel to Windows 95, where Microsoft introduced this notion of a document-centric interface. And the idea there was that we're not going to worry about apps. We're going to say, I want to write a document, and it will just launch whatever the default app is for that experience. And there'll be some kind of an Olecom, whatever-based integration bit where if you want to embed an Excel spreadsheet inside of Word or vice versa, the toolbars for that application will come up when you're in doing that thing inside of
there. People miss and loved Microsoft Works for that reason.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
It was one app, and it had, and it would just do what you needed to do.
I think Microsoft Works was killed because it was too good. It solved the problem for too many people.
Yeah, you know? and not enough money.
You know, Apple had a similar thing, ClarisWorks, which they eventually split into three different apps. But so let's go back to day one. Satya talked. He said there'll be 50 plus announcements, and you know we've seen many of them, but I'm sure over the week we'll see more. He talked about five, putting ChatGPT into search.
Let's do it this way. If you had to name like the thing or the top three things, like what were the biggest things you think that came out of this? Like what were the biggest announcements or the most impressive?
I think the overarching story is, hey, you like ChatGPT. Let us show you how to make one. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I think the biggest piece in this, which we didn't get a lot of eye time on, but I think is going to be incredibly important, is this thing called prompt flow.
Right.
What's that?
So this is part of that AI studio.
Oh, it generates prompts for you, in effect.
Well, and it's the place where you are going to start shaping the prompts you want your app to respond to and how you want to respond to them. So this is where your responsibility as the programmer is going to land working through scenarios.
I'm going to throw in something crazy here. I think somebody yesterday used the word skeuomorphic. Maybe it was you, Richard. But remember,
I've known to use that word.
Skeuomorphism came about because we had to transition people from physical objects like file folders and floppy disks into a digital world. Now we're comfortable with the digital world, and I wonder if this prompt tool is about a new kind of skeuomorphism, moving you from the world of drop down menus and click interfaces into a.
Well, it's like why would an ebook reader have a fake page turning animation?
Yeah, makes people comfortable.
Like how literally are we taking this action that to most people today doesn't mean anything anymore?
Now people are used to menus, context, you know, deep menus and. You know, clicks and switches and buttons and all of those, you know, graphic interface cruft. So we got to give them that. But what if we give them a tool that takes that and turns it into the new medium for communication, which is prompts?
Yeah, right.
Maybe that's what that's all about. That tool is a bridge. I think a lot of what actually, and it was Stevie Batiche who got this in my mind, is that we are in an evolutionary period where AI is going to become increasingly part of what we do.
We're going to transition. We see this. We talked about this in the context of Loop. Just to use a really simple example, we all grew up using Word and Excel and PowerPoint, you know, and those things will move forward. But in the future, this thing called Loop can consume that stuff. So it will bring forward everything you have. It will read it. It will work with it. You can write out to it. But there's going to be a whole collaboration and productivity workflow thing happening in this new solution. And that over time, you know, backwards compatibility doesn't really go away, but it becomes less important. It becomes what used to be the UI has now been replaced. But it's not
The trick with Loop, when we did a run as on this, we were talking about trying to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And the canonical example was the old sales guy whose numbers are awesome, but you can't get him to use Teams for anything.
So exactly.
Just email me the price list in an Excel spreadsheet in my email. And now he still has that email, except that Excel spreadsheet is a Loop component that every time he opens it, fetches the current version automatically. Right.
It's always up to date.
Or, better yet, becomes part of this Microsoft graph, and our AI can just say, well, what's the price of that widget? And it pulls it right up without even looking at the spreadsheet.
So this thing being up in SharePoint or wherever, OneDrive for Business, whatever you want to call it, it is absolutely part of the Microsoft graph. Yeah. That's what's beautiful about it. In some ways, when you're emailing something around, it becomes
integrated into the fabric.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And
you just really is sliding very comfortably with Microsoft terminology there.
Microsoft Fabric was one of the five things that Nadella
noted about. Microsoft lover, Leo LaPorte.
Well, Richard Campbell pointed out that Fabric used to mean something completely different.
That's right. Yeah. We don't talk about that.
Now it's a data lake, right? It's a new kind of data lake which contains all of your data in one place. He also said, Satya also talked about safety, and this kept coming up for me, maybe not you guys so much, and really that was the only place they mentioned AI safety, and he mentioned in the context of Azure AI Studio.
We're going to talk about this in a bit. We can talk about it right now if you want. Actually, I think we can, because we can go out of order here. But I have been bullied over Microsoft and ethical AI by people from Microsoft, and I would like to address that.
And no bullying allowed, be best.
Yeah. Well, okay. I can handle it. It's a little rough when it comes from like executives at the company that you cover for a living, but
yikes.
But yeah. But some public, some private, whatever. But I did some digging, and I'll do a panhouse and tell a story that has nothing to do, it seems to have nothing to do with what I'm about to talk about. Richard will appreciate this, because one of the apocryphal stories that everybody knows about is that Microsoft at one point fired all of their QA testers, and now Windows is terrible, right? Everyone knows this story. Yep. Everyone knows the story that Microsoft fired their AI ethics team, and oh my God, what are they doing? They're terrible, right? Everyone knows these stories. Are they true? Right? So I did some digging. And in the case of the Microsoft fired all their QA testers, that's complete nonsense. That's not what happened. It is a horrible coincidence, and it is a coincidence that Microsoft did start the Windows Insider program about 3 months after they got rid of the rest of their the remainder of their dedicated QA team. But the reality is that as part of the move from the Sinofsky era to the Meyerson era, they wanted to get rid of the silos. And one of the systems that Sinofsky had put in place was that developers were over here, testers were over here, and they'd never communicated, and they hated each other. And Meyerson just kind of said, guys, we need testers in every one of our dev orgs. Like that should just be part of
a better way
the
of
process.
It. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's all that was. And everyone knows they fired the QA team.
Just the central QA team, but there's QA everywhere.
Yeah. Well, but by the way, so they did the same thing with AI. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same story. Mm-hmm. So yes, there used to be a team of, I think it was 200 people, ethics and something, AI, whatever it was. And basically, at some point, a couple of years ago, they said, guys, we need this AI stuff in everything we're doing. So we need you people to be in part of the product team. So we need you to move out of what you're doing. And you're not some invisible panel of people that makes decisions for the whole company. We can't be agile that way. You need to move into the product teams. And so over time, most of those people, 193 of them, in fact, moved into other parts of Microsoft. And at the end, there were seven left. And Microsoft's like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, no, we want to do this. Like, then you're fired. You have to get a job somewhere else. And that's who they fired.
That makes sense for me in QA. Really doesn't make sense for me in ethics. Because just like accessibility, remember Microsoft centralized accessibility.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. But you want those people on each team too, right? There has to be both.
You do. But I think ethics
there is a
one
responsible
of those
AI team
where Microsoft has to say, and we as a society have to say, what are Asimov's robotic rules for AI? What are the rules?
Right.
And I think Microsoft gave short shrift to AI safety.
This is more nuanced than I just suggested. So to your point, there was a, how do I explain this? There was an op-ed in the New York Times that was written, I want to say 2 months after Microsoft, or maybe 1 month after Microsoft came up with all their AI stuff back in February. And this guy, Reid Blackman, who was a government advisor in digital ethics, said that you have, I think it was six AI ethics principles. Bing AI violates five of them. And he went right down the list. Like, this is what's going on. And he says, you don't have to take my word for it. We're going to use Microsoft's principles. We're going to show what they said. And now we're going to show what they're doing. And you can see that they're violating their own commitment to creating reliable and safe AI. So that's the other half of the story. I will say that we've had this discussion in the past about, and I've kind of evolved it over time, but I believe that AI came out of Microsoft at this point in time, specifically because of the market cap and the stock price. And they needed something to goose that because, Azure revenue growth was 70, 70, 70, 60, 40, and it was 27% in the last quarter. And what they didn't want was Wall Street to suddenly react and say, oh my God, what's going on with this company? They used to be on the leading edge and now they're Oldsmobile again. And so I think AI puts them back up in the perception.
Absolutely.
That helps the stock price.
Absolutely.
Chris Cappicella, our friend, got in a lot of trouble recently because an internal email he had written in response to employees complaining about compensation and not getting raises went public. And what he wrote was, he's like, guys, look, there's nothing, he doesn't control their raises, by the way. He's the chief marketing officer. But he said, look, this is very plain language. If you want to be compensated better, you need to make sure that you're doing something to positively impact Microsoft stock price. And what he meant by that was AI. Like, you mm-hmm. need to make sure that you're at it. That your job is to put AI into whatever your product is. And my God, people went after him like he was like the Antichrist or something. But what he's really doing is just kind of parroting the internal emails that Microsoft executives were sending out last year saying, guys, we are doing AI. You need to wrap your heads around this and you need to get on board because this is happening. And it started happening in February, you know? It's not perfect. I mean, I don't mean this. Look, and to the earlier point about Windows and QA testing, do I believe that Windows quality has gone down dramatically during Windows 10 and now Windows 11? Yeah, 100% I do, right? Do I believe that Microsoft fired their entire QA team and that's why? No.
Yeah.
It's really hard to test accurately against the billions of configurations of PCs that are out there in the world. And the reality is it doesn't matter how much you test something. Once you put it out in front of the whole world, you're going to find problems right. You didn't find during testing.
And it makes sense.
I do feel they don't do enough testing.
It makes sense to centralize testing around development. I think ethics is one of those global properties that you really need to have as a company, an ethical point of view. You note that every screen they showed said in very tiny print, this information generated by an AI and may be inaccurate. I think this is something that Microsoft's going to have to address, and it certainly would be a concern of mine in business. You said, Paul, during the keynote, well, it's more accurate because it's a constrained data set. You're pulling it from actual numbers, so it's less likely to be inaccurate. I hope that's true. I guess we'll all have to get used to that.
So I'm sorry, I just want to be clear. They do have that body. It's called the Responsible AI Console. It's chaired by Brad Smith. It oversees
that's right. Brad Smith is
Microsoft's efforts
that's
across right. the entire company. Yeah. They actually do have that.
Good, they need that.
The problem is you hear that the exact team name is, let me see if I can just find it. It's ethics and something. The little team, the ethics and society was what the team that got laid off was the remainder of a team that used to have 200 people in it that was down to seven because they refused to leave their team and even try to find another job inside Microsoft.
The jobs that they were finding were being the ethical component of AI development in different teams.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, they were still asked them to do the same job, but to do it up close to a given implementation where they wanted to be there to inject ethical behavior into the code as it was being developed rather than wait till the end and find out they did it wrong, which is dumb.
The notion that there are people in the world, including people who are super knowledgeable about AI, are trying to warn a company they work for or the rest of the planet that this is dangerous and we need to put the brakes on and we need to, you know, whatever, is not unique to Microsoft. Google has fired someone, actually fired a couple of
Google fired their team too. Margaret Mitchell and Tim Gebru, they fired a bunch of people.
the so-called godfather of AI at Google, left on his own so he could go out to the world and warn
I do that. Yeah, that's Jeffrey. You know, I can't remember his last name, but
Jeff Hinton.
Hinton, that's it. But I have to say, some of these people, not so much Timnit Gebru and Margaret Mitchell, but certainly Hinton, are worried about the machines taking over. They're worried about Terminator, Skynet. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking
but
about.
But that's not Jeff. That is not what Jeffrey Hinton said.
Oh, good. Okay.
Let's be clear. Jeffrey Hinton left Google because he turned 75.
He was retiring. Yes. Right. Yes. He stayed there longer than he needed to.
Yeah. He hit the limit. And this is also a university professor who never made any money in his life.
Right.
All of his grad students spun off into these tech giants and made a fortune. And eventually somebody said, hey, why don't you set up a company that we can buy?
Right.
And they basically rewarded him. Right. But he also made it very plain in a couple of his interviews that point blank, there was a bunch of things he wanted to say about how Google was doing things ethically that he thought was right, that Google wouldn't let him say while he worked there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Defending the Canadian. Good job, Richard. Defend the Canadian.
He's an Englishman.
Oh, okay.
Hobby.
But he's a Toronto, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just like this stuff is I think we can be victimized by stories that sound true. That you know, it's like a telephone game. That. Like the story is told and told and told, and by the time you get to the end, it's something else. And now everyone knows that this is the truth. No, I think that's not what happened.
I count on you guys to do that. I think that's one of our missions at Twit is
find
to
the truth.
Go past the link bait and the the easy answer and really. Tell what's actually going on.
I want to be clear. I don't mean to say I've looked into these stories and now I believe that everything Microsoft is doing is fine. That is not the case. That's not the case at all.
What about the safety issue? Do you think they?
I don't know enough about it to say. I mean, that's not. Yeah.
I feel like they didn't want to talk about it because they didn't want to raise it.
There are really cheap things you can say about AI that everyone. People are going to lose jobs. Of course,
that's
technology.
Yeah, that's people.
People
losing.
Who sold horses lost jobs when cars became a thing. Mm-hmm. The railroad industry that made it possible to move across this country efficiently. I'm sure there were jobs that were stagecoach jobs became less valuable or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're trying to save coal jobs now for some reason instead of moving to more efficient forms of or less disastrous forms of fuel or whatever.
Less expensive forms of energy.
Whatever. Wow. This is any technology, right? This is going to be the argument. I talked about the cloud computing thing in the pre-con session to TechEd. Do you mean to tell me that my last act as an exchange administrator is going to be to hand over my email to Microsoft? Yes, because your company doesn't exist to do email. That's not its point. Your company exists to sell widgets or whatever the heck, whatever they do. Mm-hmm. You've created an email infrastructure because we needed it because of whatever, but it's become like its own business. It's better for the company for you not to be doing that kind of thing. And these are hard decisions, but this is the reality. So yes, all the examples they show, a lot of it is this is going to make your job easier. And that's a good marketing approach to anything like this. We should be cognizant of the fact that this also means some guys are not going to be necessary anymore. We joked about it, Leo and I think before Richard came up, I don't remember the name we used, but it was like, Mary, it seems like all you're doing is clicking a button. Would you say, how much of your day would you say is clicking in a button that okays something that AI suggests? Like at some point, do we just get rid of the button and just let AI do it? I mean,
I think we're on that.
This is the dark, underbelly. Yeah. I mean, at some point.
Scott Goo yesterday said, every app will be reinvented with AI. He said new apps will be built with AI that weren't possible before. Yeah. Somebody said, I made a note of it because I loved the phrase. I think it was Kevin Scott, Microsoft CTO Kevin Scott, that AI was a big bucket of unrestrained capability. And I really
Kevin
liked
Scott is, I don't know if you noticed, a plain smoking man.
I really enjoyed
that. Oh, no,
that.
I'm sorry. I meant a profane smoking man.
A profane. Man. Maybe he wanted to say it a little differently.
Yeah. I like the way he speaks.
But it really was, I think, of both days, and I think you guys agreed with me, the best statement of what Microsoft's up to was Stevie Batiche.
Yes, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that was at the very end
landing
of today's keynote.
After 90 minutes of nonsense, all of a sudden clarity emerged from the clouds. Yeah. it was I thought that was astonishing.
So
and
crisp.
I was already looking
in like 7 minutes, like so yeah. yep. crisp.
Yep. I want him to keynote now. I want him to be the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought he was amazing.
He showed the mother of all demos, a little clip from Doug Engelbart's demonstration of how a mouse worked. And he said AI is the next generation, the new interaction technology. Instead of dragging a pointer around, AI is going to do that. He said it'll be less programmatic, more piloted. And then he laid out a vision for AI's integration into everything, starting with what we have today, which is AI as a kind of a sidebar, the Bing chat. Yeah,
that's
helper.
The co-pilot model.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He said it was beside, inside, and outside. So we're at the besides stage right now. It's minimally disruptive. You still work the way you used to work. It's like your little plastic pal.
It's the three stages of AI grief.
Yeah. That's what it is. Stage two, which I think Microsoft, people are already starting to do, and Microsoft is really urging developers to move to this stage. He says the AI will be the main scaffolding of the app. It will replace the input loop. You know, the input loop watches for key clicks and mouse movements. Right. It will be the main input loop now will be the AI. And so it'll be less dependent on point and click. There'll be fewer toolbars, fewer deep menus as an example.
Yeah, because you won't need them, which I thought was the most important part of that. Yeah, right. We're not talking about cleaner UI. We're saying we don't need UI.
Right. You know? He used Luminar Neo as an example. This is an app that was available first on the Mac, but is actually, I think both Mac and Windows, they've been cross-platform. Yeah. A Ukraine development team called Skylum, they do really interesting stuff. And he showed how AI can be used with a slider on a photograph to modify the photograph and mentioned that there were 20 engines running at the same time. So that was...
I think this is the key bit. Because in fact, someone mentioned this notion that Microsoft has of meeting people where they are, customers, developers, whatever it is. And that really is about meeting users where they are, right? I need to get something done. I'm not going to go over to a chat bot on the side and say, hey, I need to edit this photograph so that race car isn't blurry, but it's, you know, clear looking, right? You go to the app in this case and the app needs to do this, right? It's smart. I think AI is, you're going to see this. You can almost see the blog post coming. The Microsoft Photos app that's in Windows is going to be updated to do this kind of stuff, but only on an NPU or if you have a really fast GPU maybe or whatever.
Well, that was one of the things that you were focusing on was a lot of what they were talking about. You couldn't do on existing hardware, certainly not on existing Intel hardware. That you'd need a Qualcomm.
They kind of underplayed that too, by the way.
They mentioned like, you know, Intel's Meteor Lake coming this fall is going to have an NPU built in. AMD already has an NPU enabled
7040,
mobile processor. So I think his talk was partly here's where we are, but here's where we're going was really the focus of it. Final point.
I wish there had been more, though, of an industry call where they kind of said, look, we need PC makers to come on board with us, use these new chips that have NPUs. This is, you shouldn't be selling a PC this coming season that doesn't have this. Like, this has to be just is
well, and that's
just like you wouldn't ship one without a microprocessor.
Maybe this is our message to listeners and to our audience, to users. You shouldn't be buying a PC without an NPU.
Richard's going through this right now. Richard wants to replace his.
Staring at my book two, saying, "What do I replace this with?" And it's like,
you might want to wait. It's gonna, give it like 4 to 6 months, and we'll see.
Yeah, I think
happens.
In the fall, should be.
Yes,
the interesting
I agree. End of the year is gonna be very interesting.
Yep.
Finally, he said that the third stage after beside AI inside is AI outside, and that's to me the most interesting and also the biggest opportunity for Microsoft.
AI Olay.
Well, but also Satya Nadella was talking about that yesterday, the idea of platform. He even quoted Bill Gates saying, Bill Gates defined the term platform as a tool that makes more money for its users, its developers, than it does for the people who created the platform. Windows is a success to the degree that developers for Windows make more money than we do. And Satya brought that up for a good reason. That's the opportunity here. Windows and AI, particularly in Copilot, will be something
Microsoft's famous for, right? Like, Microsoft has been extremely good at building ecosystems.
Yeah, who better to do that? This is
also this is where Microsoft kind of wins, right? I mean, can win. When you hear about things like Bing chatbot and stuff like that, it's like, it's, you know, guys, what is this? It's still Bing, you know, but where
have you noticed how little they said Bing over the past
yes,
2 days?
Right.
They did talk about it.
It's
replaced Bing with Copilot, didn't they? Really?
No, well,
they want you to talk Copilot,
but yeah, they do, of course. But because that's where Copilot is the platform part of AI
right.
for them. It's where exactly. they sell Azure, right? It's where they sell all these other services. It's where, you know, people will buy a Windows machine to do their development on, and they connect to Azure in the cloud. And it's that's where they're going to make money from this. They're going to make other people successful, other companies, right? And yeah, Bing will have go from 3% to 6% market share or something. Who cares? I mean, it's fine. Every point of market share is whatever $1 billion. That's great. But that's not where the money, you know, when you look at the big pie chart, Bing is like this single pixel line somewhere, and the rest of it is Azure and whatever the other services are. This is Microsoft.
But Tisha's closing comments, which actually closed the 2 days of keynotes, urging you to think of developers think of Microsoft as, he said, Microsoft is beside you. It's your co-pilot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
When you see only one pair of footprints behind you, it's Microsoft is carrying you. Windows is my co-pilot.
And use AI to reach
it's
your customers.
It's Satya Nadella carrying you. Because
use AI to reach your customers' goals, not tasks. And I thought that was interesting also. They're really trying to go to this kind of meta level, this next level of computer operation where it's not very specifically focused on doing a thing, but it is much right. more broadly focused on fulfilling your goals. And I think that that's a really ambitious thing. I'm not convinced AI is going to do that, but that's certainly the ambition. And no one is better positioned. You disagreed with me, Paul, but I really think no one's better positioned to do this than Microsoft. Linux not. Apple not?
I wasn't disagreeing with you. Microsoft is better positioned. All I meant was developers might stick to Linux and they can use Visual Studio Code and still hit Azure. Like, in other words, when it's not so much about Windows, it's about Microsoft, right? So you could be on a Mac, you could be on Linux, you could be on Windows, but as long as you're consuming Azure up in the cloud, Microsoft wins. And that's kind of the point of the platform shifts to the cloud into AI. Mm-hmm. They don't really care what
platform. Well, I argue there's only two places in the world you can run a large language model right now.
Yeah.
It's right. in an Azure data center or in an Amazon data center.
And they're going GCP nuts on. Yeah. I didn't read this article, but Amazon, I don't know, a couple weeks ago or a month ago, kind of came out and said, hey, here's what we're doing in AI. And the story today is like almost they can't find a customer who's even heard about being able to access any of this stuff. There's nothing. It's a complete silence, cricket sound.
And I'm just gonna have to say, as somebody who does, you know, hobbyist developer, but a guy who does not like to use Windows for development, they made a very strong case for, you know, you even said this at we were talking about developing on Windows, not developing for Windows, and that's a
right.
big shift for Microsoft.
Right. A lot of people who aren't really paying attention or understand the nuance here might have watched this keynote and said, wow, they really talked about Windows a lot. It's like, well, they did.
For developers, you know, as a platform did. For developers.
For developers to create these AI apps that are, you know. Look, I think a cross-platform part of this is super important. When they talk about doing things like, we're going to use the open standard, so to speak, that is the ChatGPT plugin model. Very interesting, you know. Those things can run in different places in Windows. They can run in Edge. It can run in the sidebar, Microsoft 365 Copilot, whatever. It can run in Bing, you know, but it can also run in ChatGPT, and it can run in whatever else chooses to use that. There'll be a lot of solutions based on it. It's fundamentally cross-platform. You know, Microsoft will do what they can to provide good UIs on their own platforms and all that kind of stuff. But that stuff can be out in the world, right? I mean, AI is not Windows, you know, sorry.
No, like, but nevertheless, I was looking at everything they were doing and thinking, hey, that's that's sweet. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good.
Well, that's good though, right? I have a little thing in here later about Microsoft Edge, which I can't stand, but I got to tell you, this is not about AI, but they come up with this new UI and I'm like, this kind of makes me want to use Edge. Like, it's as much as I hate this thing and I know too much about it. I see this new feature and I'm like, this is pretty cool.
That's
smart on the part of the people that make this.
And the measure of a successful keynote. We did say initially, you know, they I thought, oh, they fumbled the opportunity. They've got the world's attention for day one. They should do what Google and Apple do and make it a marketing talk. They didn't. It was really much more of a developer talk. And yet, I think of it, the marketing message was very clear. If you want to develop in AI, you want to work in AI, the place to do it is on Windows. Well, I thought that was quite good.
Like I said, they make a good case. You could argue, if you were a Mac fan, for example, you might say, well, Macs have NPUs.
Well, we have NPUs. Oh,
I mean, whatever.
Back but in Apple the day has where, no AI story. Zero.
Right.
Right?
Well, no, but if by AI story, you mean large language model.
You
would argue that Siri was the original surfacing of adversarial developed neural nets for language recognition.
We want to call it a small language model.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, Leo, is the AI banner can be anything you freaking want because it's actually science fiction.
Yeah, say large language models. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And Google has a story there and Microsoft has a story there. Apple is... In fact, a week from Monday when WWDC comes, their position will be, yeah, but we want to do it safely. So we've been very careful. We're not going to rush this to market. And that's how they're going to position the fact that they're laggard, that they're
behind.
That's
how they always position when they're last to market.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. I got to take a break and we're going to get to your bullet points because you actually have a rundown. And
by the way, we don't actually have to go through all of it. We've actually touched on at least
whatever you want, whatever you want. Yeah. We got to get Richard out of here in half an hour.
I got to get to
whiskey fast. But before we do anything, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Lookout. If there's any takeaway from all the shows we do, and especially in the last couple of days, it's that business is changed forever. The boundaries to where we work, even how we work, completely dissolved, right? Your data nowadays, always on the move. It could be on a device. It could be in the cloud. It could be across different networks. It could even be in a coffee shop right now while we speak. Now, that's great for your workforce, but it's a challenge for IT security. Lookout helps you control your data and free your workforce. How many times, have your IT departments said, you know, we have multiple point solutions. They don't work together. We've got impedance mismatches, legacy tools. We can't really control this. No, you need Lookout. Complete visibility with one app, one platform into all your data so you can minimize risk from external threats and internal threats, plus ensure compliance. It seamlessly secures hybrid work so your organization doesn't have to give up productivity for security. And as I said, it makes your IT's job so much simpler. And when it comes to security, simple is better, right? Something too complex, it's easy to let things slip through the cracks. With a single unified platform, Lookout reduces IT complexity, giving you more time to focus on whatever else is coming down the pipe. Good data protection shouldn't be a cage. It should be a springboard letting you and your organization bound toward the future of your making. Visit lookout.com right now. Lookout.com. Learn how safeguarding your data, securing hybrid work, and reducing IT complexity is easy with Lookout. Lookout, LOOKOUT, lookout.com. We thank him so much for supporting Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell. I know, Richard, you're probably going to go back. You got a Mark Rusinovich interview in about 20 minutes.
So yeah.
We are
going to be talking about Azure and talking specifically about just how much Azure is consumed by those large language models.
No one's really talked about that. You brought it up. This is a pricey. In fact, Paul brought it up too. This is a pricey technology.
Well, and it also explains an awful lot of the hype energy around it. They need to sell a lot of seats to leave this thing on.
Yeah.
Is if they, you know, it's going to cost the same amount in base operating regardless. So until you get the seat count up high enough, you can't pay for it. It would really suck to have come this far and end up having to shut it off because it just doesn't make financial sense.
Right.
I see one of your notes, Paul, is that Qualcomm makes a case for local and hybrid AI. Is that a response to that?
Yeah. We've talked in the past about how, you know, Apple... Partially because they just don't have this kind of data center cloud AI capability.
They use Azure in many cases, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they were very early to the game with MPU-style capabilities in their phones. And if you go back and watch Apple you know, keynotes from years past. It's, I was confused at the time. I'm like, well, I don't understand what the point of this is. You know, they have this neural, what do they call it? The neural engine, you know, it has so many cores, yada, yada, on each chipset generation. Didn't quite get it. I always felt like companies like Microsoft and Google and Amazon that can have this stuff in the cloud were maybe more on point. But what happens over time is you realize the best possible scenario is to have both, you know, the hybrid model that Qualcomm and Microsoft now are talking about. And Qualcomm has been building MPU. They don't call them MPUs, but it's MPUs. It's the combination of their GPU, CPU, and what is essentially an MPU into a single SoC for 7 or 8 years now. And now we're working towards Gen 2 on the PC for their PC chips. And that's the hybrid thing they were talking about, right? That if you could do stuff locally, it's always better. You're going to have from a performance standpoint, but you also want the power of the cloud, because depending on what the data is you're working off, sometimes that stuff's going to be up in the cloud as well. It can really take I'm curious what Mark Rizinovich has to say about this. It's possible that this is what will save the Azure consumption stuff, is if you can offload some of that to the client, that might make for a better experience all around, including from a cost perspective.
Yeah, I don't know. Doing stable. The way that these language models are built, it's just so big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, but they do demos where they're doing stable diffusion locally, and it's, you know, 12x, 9x, depending on, you know, the thing, the action you're taking, better performance than working off of a CPU, which, of course, it's kind of like the difference between, you know, software and hardware accelerated graphics, but. Even for systems that have GPUs, there's enormous advantages. And to get anywhere near the type of performance they see on like a thin and light notebook for AI tasks, you would need like, you know, a dual NVIDIA graphics card set up, you know, in some workstation rig that would cost tens of thousands of dollars. And so this is what we're working toward, right? This is what we're trying to do. So, we're all going to have it. It's sort of just like, adding AI to Bing, it's like, oh my God, they have this huge competitive advantage. It's like, well, no, I mean, everyone's going to have that, you know. Soon we're all going to have NPUs. I would say Qualcomm was here first on the PC side, but AMD has it on one chipset, and Intel's adding it on one chipset. You know, we'll get there.
I'm just fascinated. You want to know the difference between the models? They're doing stable diffusion on the PC.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
And yet the large language model, that's a nope.
right. But this, you know, I think that stuff is cool. Windows Studio Effect, which doesn't affect anyone today, will soon affect everyone. It will be great, you know.
How about Moment 3? They kind of teased that we might get Moment 3 a little earlier.
Yeah, this is so screwed up. You know, you guys know this better than anybody. I've spent this entire year trying to come to terms with Microsoft's release schedule. And this month throws a little bit of a wrench into the plan, because I talk about week B, right, Patch Tuesday, and week D, which they've settled on, they've changed to as their new model for delivering the next week B, you know, moment or controlled feature release, whatever. This week has five Tuesdays this month. Sorry. So the question was, would they release it yesterday or would they release it next week? Next week, yesterday being 2 weeks from past Tuesday, next week being 2 weeks until the next past Tuesday. So they didn't release anything yesterday. I thought, okay, there's your answer. It's coming out on the 30th. Nope, they released it today. And it's not the entire thing, because that's how they release things now, right? Everything is a controlled feature release. So it's part of Moment 3 was released today in preview form. I don't know what that means to all of Moment 3 on Patch Tuesday next month. If the whole thing comes out, if they're going to dribble it. There's no way to know. Anyway, I don't even know why I try to keep track of this, because every time I think I've got it, they change it again. So
I think they're just trying to figure it out themselves.
Yeah, I think they're making it up as they go along. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft tweeted that you can get some of the enhancements in Moment 3. Via this update that came out today. It's a preview update, right? So you have to go get it. I did actually answer one of my questions was, remember the last CFR they released, I guess we'll call that, is that one toggle in Windows Update that says get the latest updates as soon as they're available. You can click that thing on. The idea there is that if there's some CFRs coming out, if they're going to randomly put it out in the world, they'll give it to you first, right? You'll be in that first wave. So I was curious, like, okay, well, What about these moment updates? Like, it's not really clear how moment updates get rolled out. I assume that they're rolled out like CFRs. It's just instead of one CFR, you get like a bunch of CFRs, right? So you might get them soon. You might get them later. Who knows? That's not the case, as it turns out. But regardless, for the preview update, if you click this thing on, you will get it, right? So this, if you want to get preview updates,
but
no questions asked.
Oh, that explains it. Because I have an update waiting for me, and I have,
and that's what it, and it says preview, I bet.
Yeah,
you're on board.
So what you have is a subset of moment three, which is going to require me to once again update my understanding of how these things come out.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
So is it moment 2.75?
Yes, exactly. Moment three alpha two. I don't know.
Moment three community edition.
Yeah, exactly.
So is this is the tweet. That started it all. If you have Homer Pro or non-managed business,
right,
Windows 11 22H2, you can get some of the new enhancements announced yesterday, right now. Yeah.
So this, like I said, opens up a question. Patch Tuesday is going to be a little under 3 weeks from today. When Patch Tuesday comes, the non-preview version of that update will appear. Will it be all of the updates? Or it will be some of the updates. I can see it going either way. I want to be clear about that. Because like I said, I think I see a moment as a series of CFR. So some of them could be scheduled to go out immediately. Some of them could be scheduled to go out randomly later on. And we see there's so many examples of this now.
If I did this now, would you be able to see, would you know what had changed?
So I don't know.
This is cumulative update preview for Windows 11. 22H2.
So
that's it, right?
I think that we went over, did we go over Moment 3 last week? I think we might have. So the problem with Moment 3 as an update is that it's not very, it's not a big deal for individuals from a UI perspective.
I'm doing it. I don't care. I'm doing it. I'm going in.
Actually, you know what? This raises a question. Let me see.
I'm going in.
Yeah, there is a way, Leo. I can tell you the way. Okay.
I'm 0%.
So here's the way. Do you on the keyboard that you're using?
Yeah.
Is there a menu key?
Oh, I don't have the menu key. That's right. This is Lenovo.
That's good.
Darn it. That was a big one. I remember you talked about that last week. Yeah.
Is it Shift plus F? Oh, no. Okay. You can try Shift plus F10 then.
Shift F10 would be the menu key.
Okay.
It's got a little Bluetooth icon on this Lenovo, but I'm sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, you might have to do Shift function key plus.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we're going to have to wait because I'm only 15% there.
Well, when you
it said it would only take 3 minutes. So this is a good test.
That's a pretty good amount of time for a little moment like this. But anyway, there aren't many UI changes that you would just kind of notice. Like, for example, most people aren't going to use the menu key on the keyboard to launch an Explorer-based context menu. Here's another one we can check is, let me see what it does before I say it. Multitasking settings in the settings app, they're worded differently, but your options used to be to show the three most recent edge tabs, right? In addition to your open windows, five most or all or none. They've limited all to 20. Probably for performance reasons, right? Probably because Edge does sleeping tabs now, and a lot of your tabs, they'd have to wake up the tab every time you switched. And I'm sure there's a endless process cycle that occurs when that stuff happens. We're not talking about major updates here, right? So there's no big UI thing where you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is going to change my life. That doesn't exist.
It's interesting because they tweeted an hour ago, if you want to get it, flip that switch, which I had already flipped. Mm-hmm. And then they said, okay, you can get it now.
But it's not
tied
full
to build. So is it because of build that they're doing this, or they just want to screw with you?
No, it's Microsoft. I don't think they know what they're doing. I think that this thing probably would have come out yesterday, and they were like, I don't know, like maybe someone forgot to flip the switch. Maybe it's today's the Windows day for the keynote, or something. I don't know.
So you say Shift F10, or maybe Function Shift.
So first, what you have to do is first click the desktop so that Explorer is selected. If that makes sense, right?
Yep. I get that. Yep.
And then Shift F10. Yeah.
All right. So click the desktop. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then shift.
Before you do that, just right-click the desktop. Just right click.
Okay. Okay. Oh, it's not. Yeah, there it is. Oh, stuff's yeah, loading.
Discord.
I hate that. Everything loads. Minutes.
Yeah. That's crazy.
I don't want things to load.
Yeah.
Don't load, man.
Can you like Windows key D this?
I'm trying to find somewhere to go. What is this? Restart to update. Oh, that's Bitwarden. Okay. Yeah, let's go to a blank. Here's a blank page.
Okay. So just right click. So you'll see there's your context menu. Right?
Yeah.
That's the normal context menu. Right? Yeah. So now click the desktop.
Okay. Click it. Okay. And then do the shift function. Plus F10. F10. Yeah.
Probably with the function, yeah.
Oops. Wait. No. No. No.
Auto load is...
Minimize.
Not a good thing.
Go. Okay. Oh, this is really... Oh, no. What's happening?
People say that rebooting your computer is not disruptive.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Try that again. Shift F10. It brought in that for some reason. Yep.
All right. Make sure... Are you doing it with the function key or not?
Oh, there it is. There it is. It happened.
All right, so now you see there are your access keys.
I got V-O-E-W-1-D-R-T.
So type V or O, right,
v.
to see the next one.
Oh, look at that.
More access keys. That's new. There you go. Exciting.
It worked. That was exciting. I am here. I have moment three.
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing. There's really not much to it. I'm sorry.
That's
not it, but it's something you can see. Like you can be like, oh yeah, okay.
Wow. Man.
You know, if you like I said, if you use Edge, they've limited the amount of tabs that can appear in Alt Tab to 20 at most, right?
Now, if I had a Windows key, it'd be great because then you would just really easily hit it. I mean, menu key rather. It would be very easy. Yeah. But since I don't, I mean, Shift F10 isn't the most intuitive.
It's like start. What do you call it? Windows keys on keyboards. You would like Control Escape. I think where it brings up the Windows the start menu.
Right.
Right. The problem is today we have Windows key shortcuts, and those are Windows key P brings up the presentation menu or whatever. You can't do Control Escape P.
Right.
Like it doesn't work with the keyboard shortcuts.
So. Right. Well, I'm an Emacs user, so I'm used to that. I know how that works.
Well, if you use something like Visual Studio Code or Terminal, there's good two-level keyboard shortcuts like Control-K, Control-R, I think is one Code, stuff like that. And in Visual Studio, too. Like you want to comment like a whole block of code or something, there's two-level keyboard shortcuts for that. It's fun.
Richard, do you want to? I'm thinking maybe because you're going to have to get out of here pretty soon. Maybe do your run as radio and your whiskey tip now, and then
for sure.
Then when you have to run, you can run because I don't want you to miss Mr. Rusinovich.
Oh no, I'm not going to miss Mr.
Rusinovich. Mr. Rusinovich.
I will abandon you.
As you should, and we would not think.
Not think any the less.
Yep.
This week on Run As Radio, incident response readiness with Paula Januszewicz, who's an old friend of mine. This is a lovely woman from Poland. You should let nowhere near your computer because she's one of the fastest hackers I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, unbelievably good at it. Cool. Oh, I will listen to this. How interesting.
Yeah. And so what she was really digging into in this conversation was the fact that how you mitigate the panic around a breach, like that people tend to overreact. And so like really having an incident response readiness plan makes a huge difference for how you escalate problems, how you encapsulate them, getting to sourcing, because often we damage the trail of the exploit in our efforts to quickly make it go away. So having a proper plan around that and a set of tools, your SIEM, your overview of your security profile are all part of that. And so that kind of planning and readiness, not even particularly expensive, just takes time. But when you have it in place, you tend to catch on to breaches before they become serious exploits and ransomware. When an exploit starts to propagate, you can see it and have more opportunity to encapsulate it. And more likely to be able to close the door behind however they did get in once you actually get to sourcing. So,
excellent.
I found the first one to Paula back in the old tech heads back in the day. And she now runs a world-class company out of Warsaw that fixes governments who have been exploited by ransomware. She's one of the best.
A good hacker is a good person to know.
Yeah, keep them on the friend's side.
Yes, good person to keep on the friend's side. Absolutely.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories from her is her going into a customer that they were talking about wanting to have a security profile done. So she showed up to the office a half hour early and asked the receptionist for access to the Wi-Fi so she could prepare.
Oh, God.
And then when they started the meeting, she just walked up and wrote down all of the administrator passwords on the whiteboard and said, any questions?
Oh, that's a great pen test. That's awesome. Give me access to the Wi-Fi. It'll only take a minute.
Yeah. It'll take a minute, and it only took her a minute.
Oh, God. I love that. Oh, I'll listen. I can't wait. Whiskey-wise, you've got a rye whiskey.
I'm one of the very rare, pure, straight ryes. So I'm happy to be in Washington State at the moment.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, this is right there.
This is Woodinville, which is a little town you and I have both been in, Paul. Yeah. Usually known for wine. There's a couple of nice wineries in that area. But the Woodinville whiskey folks have been working there for quite a few years. Some of their early additions, like if we could, I would have brought up the number 9 batch bourbon they used to make. Because boy, oh boy, that was good. But you can't get it anymore. And that's annoying. But I like this because it's kind of special. It's a straight rye. So no barley, no wheat, no corn, just rye. Which actually means it's spicy as all get out. Like it's, I don't even think it's particularly pleasant on its own. It's very potent.
Oh, interesting.
But it makes a fantastic old fashioned. Like anything you want to add a little citrus to or something, you'll really enjoy this. But yeah, straight up made in Washington. Quincy is where one of the original Microsoft Azure data centers is. But yeah, they make it all right there, aged in bourbon casks. It's very classic, but if you are expanding your horizons on understanding whiskey, drink it. You start to understand why most rye is used only a little bit as a flavor grain in whiskey, because rye on its own is a lot.
Yeah,
it's very potent.
Woodinville straight rye whiskey. Now, I'm not a big drinker, so I'm more interested in Woodinville's barrel-aged maple syrup. No, that sounds amazing. After we empty our bourbon and rye whiskey barrels, we refill them with maple syrup. Huh. Aged gracefully. That's got to cost a pretty penny, but still.
You got to think they could then take that barrel and sell it to the Scots and they'd still put whiskey in it.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd really be good.
I think it would be, yeah.
For Scotch. Fun. Richard, thank you so much. Woodinville.
My pleasure.
Yeah. If you want to take off, you can. If you want to stick around a little longer, you got a few minutes. We can continue on.
Let's do the minutes.
Do the minutes, baby.
Yeah.
What else is in here? Avatar's coming to Teams. Can't wait. Take off the legs. Put on a happy face.
Why? Why are we still talking about this?
I don't know.
Nobody wants this.
Go away.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Are you looking at what Zuckerberg did and going, boy, that was really great?
That guy's had some good ideas, huh?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you're either the argument for go back to the office or the argument for working from home. Either way, none of them involves floating around.
Yeah, it's like I used to work in this office with human beings, and now I talk to cartoon characters every 2 hours for some reason. You know,
maybe it's a stealth plan to get people working in the office again. Crazy. We're going to have another meeting on Mesh. Anybody?
We'll get them back in the office.
Anybody?
Yeah, you want to see people, you got to come in.
And again, they're always missing the main opportunity, which is I don't want to customize myself. I want to customize all the people I'm looking at.
Uh-huh. I love that.
Right.
I hadn't thought about that.
So it's like, I always know who you are, not because I recognize your face, but because I've stuck Bozo the Clown on your face. That's what your input's been worth to me. Now,
and only you would see that, I think.
Right? That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Perfect. That is an opportunity. I'm going to talk. I'll ask Phil Libin. He's got that program called that changes your background. Phil, can we do that to other people?
Yeah.
That's the way to
do it. You want to make this product successful? Let me shape my view of the company into what I believe I really see.
It would just be clowns, because everyone loves a clown.
Everybody loves a clown.
You know?
Speaking of clowns, Microsoft Edge is getting this must have hurt you to write this. Major UI revamp.
Nobody has the problems I have. I think that's clear to say. So I have this book that I wrote there. There are several chapters about Microsoft Edge. One of the problems with Microsoft Edge is that Microsoft changes it like every single month. And some of the changes they've made in recent months are pretty dramatic, right? The book is pretty visual. There's lots of screenshots. I got to update screenshots. It's a pain in the butt. So I kind of went back and I looked at it. I found some interesting changes they've made, by the way, that are not major, but they're very sly. And so I've been kind of, you know, integrating that into the book. Last week, I said, you know what? I can get the new UI through the flags interface, right? I'm going to turn this new UI on. I'm going to start doing this. I'm just going to do it. And I did an entire chat. I swear to God, edited and posted 80 screenshot changes. And then they announced this thing yesterday. Oh yeah, we're redesigning Edge. I'm like, excellent. I'm on top of this. I already have it. I don't care. And I looked at one of their screenshots and I said, God damn it. That is not what I just took screenshots of. They changed it again. It's different again. I have to redo everything I just did. Okay. And here's the kicker though. So aside from my problems with obviously only impact me, I have to say, I actually really like this new UI. I can't stand Edge. I don't think anyone should use Edge. Don't recommend it. But it is beautiful. Good. It's beautiful. It's really nice.
But what's wrong with Edge? Why shouldn't I use it?
Why should you use it? Because it does absolutely nothing to prevent you from being tracked around the internet, despite major UI suggesting otherwise. You can actually subvert most of it by using extensions, right? Privacy Badger. This is in the back of the book. I'm going to talk about this, but
okay.
Microsoft Edge is as dangerous to use as Google Chrome.
Okay,
it's just that the corporate giant behind
might as well use Chrome.
You might as well just use. Yeah, you might as well.
90% of the world uses Chrome, so.
Except for this, I mean, I will say, I like the new UI. I really like it. And yeah. I don't know.
What do you like about the new UI? It's very clean, right?
It's simple. Pretty. Honestly, I never felt that Edge or the browser, you know, I use Brave. I don't really feel that it's out of place in Windows 11. But I will say when you bring this new UI up, it fits right. It's beautiful. It just looks like Windows 11. And I think you're going to see them make this kind of a restyling across Windows 11. They're going to do it to File Explorer. I think you're going to see more apps kind of take on this look and feel. It's just really nice. It's elegant looking. I mean, I hate to compliment it. I hate it, but it's really nice.
It's a very clean interface. I have to say, I've always thought that
it's very nice. Simple. It's nice. Yeah. It is nice. They're adding new things. I think Workspaces might have come out of preview, or maybe it's in a broader preview. Microsoft Edge for Business is not a new browser, but there's this new experience coming. You actually have to be in a business, meaning you're signing in with AAD, and then you can enable it. And this allows you to kind of keep your work and your home stuff separate, basically. Kind of interesting. It seems to be enabled similarly to Profiles or Workspace, you know. Copilot integration, obviously, that stuff is very interesting. Like I said, if you want to do image generation type stuff and you don't want to pay the bill or whatever, do it right in Edge. It's free. It just works. It's pretty good. And also, unlike ChatGPT, it's not like a square, which is kind of a weird thing. I know you can expand it out later, but it will generate images of reasonable proportions, if that makes sense. So there's other new stuff going on with Edge, but I can't stand Edge, and I like the way it looks. You're not seeing the new UI there right now yet, by the way. But
okay, I'll get that.
I will explain how in the back of the book.
Good, save that for later,
because it's not out and stable yet.
Okay.
Please tell me you want to talk about the Xbox thing, because I am just staring at this acquisition going, my God.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But before we do, I just got to ask Leo one question. You heard about Neva,
yeah,
obviously.
So
I have gotten several people asking me what you're going to do. So what are you going to do, Leo?
Well, you know, that Google search I hear is a real up and coming search engine. The reason I wanted a replacement for Google search is not so much for tracking. I mean, certainly that's legit.
Yeah.
But just because increasingly Google search is not giving me search results. It's giving me a lot of know, yes. top of the yes. above the fold stuff is just a bunch of crap.
Yeah. That's right.
And
sponsors.
So I don't know. DuckDuckGo, start page. I loaded Brave because of you to see how Brave search was. It's pretty
good. Brave search is no good.
It's not great.
It's no good. Brave is great. Brave search is not so great.
Maybe Bing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm going to do.
All right. Listen. Don't get off the
crazy.
Leash. Get off.
Help me, please.
It's not that
bleak. Life's too short.
Like, yeah. Friends don't let friends use Bing is
Duck,
all I'm
Duck,
saying.
DuckDuckGo, what should I use?
I use Google. I have to. I mean, yeah. I can't. It's like you're shooting yourself in the face.
Yeah, Neva was pretty close. Neva was pretty close, I have to say, to the Google results. I was happily using Neva and paying $5 a month. There is another one that's even more, that's $10 a month.
Yeah.
Somebody was recommending to me. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I guess, you know, until I come along, found something better, I'll go back
to Google.
Here's
an idea. I don't have an exact example of this, but it has to exist. I use an extension in my browser to clean up the Twitter UI because I don't like all this garbage, you know.
Yeah.
There's got to be an extension that will get rid of all the sponsor crap in Google search. There's got to be.
Oh, there must be.
Got to be.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I bet there is.
I do not know.
I don't either, but I bet there. I just thought of it as we were talking. There's got to be.
Clean Google. You got clean Gmail. Why not clean Google?
There's got to be.
That's actually a great
idea. Anyway, it's something to look up. That's an idea.
I'm sad because Neva, you know, they were kind of intimating. They were taking features out. I had a feeling they were about to pivot. They just, you know, the problem was $5 a month was enough to live on if enough people bought it, but nobody even knew about it.
By the way, that is the fascinating part of the story. And it speaks to my comments earlier about Bing, which is this. They said, you know, people who use this thing loved it. People didn't mind paying for it. The problem was getting people to switch from the default search engine. Nobody was interested in this. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem Microsoft's going to face with Bing. You know, if in some magical future where Bing search was actually better all the time and this AI stuff was unique to Bing, I still feel like they'd have a hard time, you know, getting people to switch. I don't think people want to switch. You know, the thing we just raised, which is true, this all the garbage at the top. I mean, it says a lot where people are like, yeah, I don't care. I'm just going to put up with this. Like,
mm-hmm. Right.
No, because as soon as you take responsibility for any of it, then you have to take responsibility for all of it. Oh, you're going to start caring about your privacy now. Well, that's a lot for you to care about.
Yeah.
Right.
And the default of just like, whatever. It's psychologically consistent. I don't own any of it. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right. I'm going to go.
Yep.
Richard Campbell. God bless you. It's great to have you. Say hi to Mr. Rusinovich. Get him on the show sometime.
I will. Yeah. We'll see what we can do.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
Richard Campbell, runisradio.com. Now we go back to the pure Paul Thurrott, the goodness you've always expected.
The gooey center of this cookie that is Windows Weekly.
Anything else in this rundown that you want to talk about?
Pre-Xbox.
We can get to the Xbox whenever you're in the mood, but...
I think we're Xbox. I think we're good.
ChatGPT comes to the iPhone, the real ChatGPT, not some
interesting API. That they would go to the iPhone first.
Yeah, right? Isn't that? Yeah. Well, they'd go to Windows Phone if they could.
I just resuscitated, I think it was 13 Windows phones.
What?
Yeah, I still have a bunch of old devices. So I brought them. I brought them back up. I reset
just to
them.
See what would happen.
And they all work fine. Most of them had the right date and time. And I just, it's like, what's going on? It was a sad reminder of how excellent those phones were. It's so good.
Even I think that.
Oh, so sad.
I really
looked at this
something.
And I thought, my God, you could make a run with this right now. Yeah. Like, this would work right now.
Well, maybe now's the time.
Yep. Just license Android and run Android apps on it too. And it could work.
They're close.
Beautiful.
Call it the AI phone.
So ChatGPT is on the iPhone. So whatever. Bing is the default search engine now in ChatGPT. It was a little bit like when Apple made Internet Explorer the default browser on the Mac. I don't know if anyone remembers that. When Microsoft made that investment, you know, that kind of helped save the company. Most people are just going to switch, right? I mean, so... I can't imagine most ChatGPT users are going to want to use Bing, but okay. So that's most of the, I think that's most of the build stuff, right? I think we pretty much.
Yeah. I think we did a good job. And of course, if you didn't see either day one or day two, we put them both on the news feed, twit.tv/news. You can watch on day one, Rich Campbell and I going over the contents as they happened. And then on day two, Paul, Richard, and I.
I don't know if we said it on the show. I know we said it. Well, maybe we did. Maybe we said it up front. It may be repeating. I really wanted to see some hint of Windows 12 in this keynote. And I didn't expect it, but that's what I wanted. I was hoping to see it. And then when it ended, I thought, oh, that's too bad. They didn't really do anything. But it was you who said, no, actually, I think they kind of did. Like the sidebar thing is the Copilot is Windows 11. And this thing where they infuse it is maybe that's Windows 12. And that rings true to me. I think that's the evolution of this thing. So we're going to add it to Windows 11, which is this existing thing. But maybe the vision for Windows 12, which, by the way, I have been talking about for a while, is the AI release.
That's got to be a massive rewrite. Or not rewrite, but that's a big change.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, let's take him at his word. You know, as Stevie Batish said, you're going to have fewer window or toolbars and buttons and things because you don't need them anymore, right? That maybe Windows actually becomes simpler because we won't have the need for all this UI. I mean,
in
Windows
a way, though, my fear is it'll turn it into a command line again. That when instead of, you know, having
it's just
a
prompt, right? You just ask a question.
Instead of having a button for dark mode, you have to type turn on dark mode.
You know, I got to tell you, part of me would embrace that. But yeah, I don't
keep your hand
on
the keyboards.
That, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, you could talk to it too, right? I mean, they did all this work. Going back to Windows Mobile days, Microsoft has been doing speech to text and obviously all the Cortana stuff, natural language input. I mean, it's just, you know,
I don't really want, I mean, I use a command line all the time, but I don't really want to go to a command line.
No, GUI. I really don't see that either, but it's not really a command line, right? This is like more of a Zork interpreter. It's a natural language, right? I mean, it's
it
not about
what you want and does it.
Yeah.
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 But again, I think that's less efficient.
It is. Yeah.
Think
about a classic Microsoft Office application like Word and before the ribbon, when it was all menus and toolbars and how bulked up it got. And they're like, all right, we're going to do this ribbon thing. We're going to simplify it, you know. And the demos they did when they said they were using Word during that keynote, in the videos, the word they were using was Word on the web. And it was a really stripped down UI.
Interesting.
Simplified toolbar kind of a thing. And I that's been the kind of progression for apps on Windows, at least. And I would say on the Mac, too. Like, I don't use the Mac a lot. But, you know, when you start bringing in things like Catalyst and you're influenced by the design decisions that you make on mobile, UIs tend to be simpler. I think you're starting to see this everywhere. I mean, I think we're a little overloaded with stuff. You know,
do you think of voice interfaces? I mean, we've tried this.
I think it's one way to do it. Just like, you know, it's like someone who would say in the past, like, I think tablet PCs are the future. I think people are going to interact with pens, you know, to which I say, I'm a writer and I can't write with a pen anymore. Hand cramps up writing a check. I had to go to the post office yesterday. I couldn't write out an address without, like, you know, shaking my hand. It's like, I can't, I just don't have that dexterity anymore. But some people
I
are
just
artists
ordered,
or
and that probably is a mistake. The new Kindle Scribe.
Yeah, well, of course you have to try it, right?
It's a Kindle, but it's a big Kindle with a pen.
Oh, Scribe. I'm sorry. I was thinking of the new little Surface Pro looking thing.
I have the Remarkable 2, but this is, but it's not a book reader. It's just a note taker.
Right.
This is a Kindle, a book reader.
It integrates with Microsoft Word, right? It does that stuff too.
Yeah. You can actually email your notes to Word.
Yep.
It's got handwriting to text conversion. They just added that. That's actually what put me over the top, is they finally added the features that make it more interesting. You can actually be reading a book and annotate it directly on the book with your pen.
Nice.
So it's much more natural.
So it comes with the pen then?
It comes with the pen. Anyway, I'll show you when it comes.
This thing?
I want to say 8. It's bigger. Yeah. It's bigger than a normal.
I would I would move back to Kindle for reading right now if they could just do color e-ink. I'd give anything.
They could, in theory. I have a color e-ink, a 7-color e-ink screen I've been messing with for Ask the Tech Guy. Let me see how big the...
I guess to your question, though, I think handwriting or voice is just one way, right? It's one of...
Yeah, I mean, that's my problem. I don't want to start typing a lot more on a GUI.
I don't think... Yeah.
10 well, point, it depends on what you're 10. Doing. 10.2 right? so inches. It's iPad size. That's what it is. It's almost 8. An 10. iPad. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably 8 by 10. It's probably paper sized.
Here you go.
Well, no, I can't be because it's 10.2 diagonal.
That's about...
Is that about right?
That's about 8.5. Yeah, that's pretty close to 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, I guess it is. 85 instead of 88. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
I'll bring it in and you can watch me write on it.
Yeah, I'm curious about it.
It's got a backlight, which the Remarkable did not have, so I couldn't read it in bed. Right. I'm just intrigued by it.
I used to have the little War of the Worlds lamp off of Kindle before
I had that. And then I had, I tried various clamps on the bed. I finally got a thing that goes around your neck. It has two lights.
That's funny.
You look like, maybe Alvin, exploring the deep right around here. But it stays on. It stays pointed at the screen. I don't know. Anyway, I won't need that anymore.
I'm sure I've owned every single Kindle ever made. As have I.
Yeah. This is that 300 PPI.
First ones with backlighting, it was like you could see lights kind of they were brighter at one point. And then eventually they smoothed out.
They finally figured it out. And it's now got a yellowish light at nighttime.
Yeah, there you go.
Digression. I apologize.
That's okay. Whatever. We can speculate about Windows 12. I think it's going
to
support.
Oh, yeah, UIs. Yeah, we were trying to think of what's the best UI. I don't know.
I don't think there is a best UI. I think we just use different things.
Yeah. Let me take a break. Let me take a break, and then we'll do the Xbox segment, if you please. And of course, the back of the book. Our show today, we were talking a little bit about Loop, talking a little bit about the idea of a kind of unified interface to your work that isn't mouse driven, it isn't command line driven. What is it? This is Miro. I've been thinking about this. This is exactly what Miro offers. Miro, M-I-R-O. You might look at it. In fact, this is the thing I want to try to get people not to do and say, oh, yeah, I know that. I've used things like that. It's like Loop or it's like a whiteboard. No, it's not. Let me put it this way. You have a team. Maybe your team is all in the office if you're lucky, or maybe there's some at home, some in the office. Maybe there's some in a different time zone. How do you keep them all on the same page? Quite literally, Miro. If your team is going from tab to tab and tool to tool, you know, every time there's a context switch, you've noticed this, you walk through a door, you forget what you were going to do. That's because that door is a context switch. Every time you switch to another program, it's another context switch, and your brain leaves the stuff that you were thinking about behind. You lose data every time you switch tabs or switch tools. With Miro, that doesn't have to happen. Miro is a collaborative visual platform that brings all your great work together. No matter where you are, no matter where you did it, you can use Google Docs and Zapier and, hundreds of different integrations. Whether you're working at home in a hybrid workspace, whether you're working in different time zones, because Miro is always there. So somebody gets up, it's the middle of the night for you, they're getting up and starting their day. They can go and see what's been done by the team, where you stand. You can zoom in and out so you can see that the 30,000 foot level, or you can get down to the nitty gritty details. It has so many different templates. In fact, my strong recommendation, if you're thinking about this, first of all, you should know Miro is going to give you your first 3 boards free. So go right now to Miro.com/podcast, make an account, get those first 3 boards. But also look at the Miroverse. That's where they've collected templates from many, many Miro users. So it's the best way to get an idea. I mean, it can be a Kanban. You can have swim lane charts. You can have timers, so you can use a Zoom meeting, have a timer, icebreakers. It's complete, graphical text, doesn't matter. Perfect for cross-functional teams. Sticky notes, comments, live reactions. There's a voting tool. What do you think of this? Or who likes this versus that? You can express what I like about it is it opens the door to creativity, no matter how you are, what kind of thinker you are, what kind of creative you are, whether you like to sketch or type or however you like to brainstorm, you can do that. Your whole group, though, can do that in one space around one idea. Miro users report saving 80 hours per user per year by streamlining conversations and cutting down meetings. This is a much better solution than a meeting. The end result, Miro gives your team the chance to always stay connected to real-time information. It gives project managers, product leads, a bird's-eye view of the whole product. Make sure nothing slips through the cracks. Start working better. Get your first three boards for free and try it. Miro.com/podcast. Miro.com/podcast. You'll be amazed at what you can do. Miro.com/podcast. Now, let's get some Xbox. You'll be amazed at what Paul can do.
So, I feel like I've been covering and following this Microsoft Activision Blizzard thing pretty closely. So, it was with some confusion that I saw the headline, which I then parroted, unfortunately. China is the 37th country to okay the Activision Blizzard acquisition. I thought, 37? How did that happen? Because the European
countries.
Union has like 20-something countries in it.
That doesn't count.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So really, it's been, I've been trying to find an exact number, and for some reason I can't, but I believe it's like 8 or 9 regulatory bodies have okayed it. One of them has 29 countries or something, whatever the number is. So that's where that comes from. But anyway, it's just like 27. Yeah. So 27 of the 37 countries that have approved the deal.
Oh.
Are part of the EU, which approved it as part of.
Okay, fine.
So, okay. I was like,
Still, 10 is amazing. The 10 different countries think they have a dog in this hunt, that they think they should have the right to say yes or no to Microsoft's acquisition of Activision.
Yeah.
It's
kind of
mind-blowing.
Well, one of them is Japan, Sony's home country. Just pointing that out. And then today, in fact, while you were doing that ad, I just saw online that Microsoft has just filed their appeal of the UK CMA decision, right? That's the regulatory body in the UK that said
competitive markets agency or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Authority. I think,
Authority. Yeah.
I think it's competition and markets authority.
I hope they throw that thing out. It's ridiculous. Really looking silly, UK.
Yeah. I love that they came out snarkily after the EU approved it. And we still think we're right. Okay, guys, settle down. Speaking of ridiculous, have you heard of the so-called gamers lawsuit? A small group of individuals in the United States decided to get together and sue Microsoft to halt the sale of Activision Blizzard. This case is awesome. They, the plaintiffs, who were described as a group of recreational video game players, argued that Microsoft would make Call of Duty exclusive to Microsoft platforms, and that the merger would lead to inflated prices for future games.
You probably know these guys.
I know. They live all over the country. They're like, they communicate with their friends and family regularly via the game, as normal people do. And they play games with these games with friends, that and it enhances their quality of life.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so the rule of the federal judge said, the day after this merger goes through, you can make this argument, and we'll see what happens then. But also, the day after this merger goes through, you can play the game in exactly the same way as you play it today. It's not like they turn like a siphon off or something. Call of Duty goes away. Like, it's just, what a waste of time. This thing is just so stupid. They also pointed out that Microsoft has made legally binding agreements not to do what these people are describing. So, whatever. Stupid.
Yeah, but 10 years from now, I won't be able to frag my mom.
I know.
All right. Sorry.
Sorry.
I shouldn't snark.
Maybe Halo will be good again in 10 years and you can play that instead.
You bring out the snark in me, Paul.
It's nice to be influential, sort of. So I don't want anyone to be like me. So related to this, one of the many 10-year deals that Microsoft made was one with NVIDIA to make its games available on GeForce Now. GeForce Now is a cloud streaming service for PC games, right? So The very first of those games has just appeared. I'm sorry, is appearing. Yeah, it's appearing tomorrow. Sorry. It's today. So Gears 5 is available today over at GeForce Now. Deathloop, Grounded, and Pentiment are coming tomorrow, and then more games are coming in the future. So this is one of the agreements they made. That's already happening. So regardless of what happens with Activision Blizzard, Microsoft's PC games are starting to come to a rival service. So there you go.
The things I like about Microsoft, unlike some other companies, they aren't petulant. There are companies out there. But there are companies out there who, if they lost the right to do this merger, would like do something nasty, something mean.
Yeah, right? That's right.
Well, in that case, you can't play Gears of War on PlayStation or something. I don't know what.
But I don't think Sony that kind wouldn't of let at one point bring Microsoft do the Minecraft thing cross platform.
Yeah, Sony is petulant. Just like, Sony's petulant. Stupid. I don't like it when these big companies act like teenagers. It's just dumb.
That's terrible.
Just dumb.
Playing games is about bringing people together so they can kill each other. I mean, why?
Let's get it straight.
Why would you limit? I want to strafe everybody. although I have to say, I would like to turn off PC players in Call of Duty. But anyway.
You got to fight for your right to frag me.
exactly. With a controller.
With a controller, yeah.
That's my preference, but you know, whatever.
No keyboards allowed in our club.
And then Sony just announced that they've sold over 600,000 PSVR2 headsets, which is actually kind of incredible because I don't know why I just said it's true. We'll assume it's true. They said it. This thing has come under a lot of fire because it's super expensive, right? It's more expensive than the console. It's a lot more expensive than the original. It's almost twice as expensive. And yet it is actually outselling its predecessor in the same 6 week. Is it 6 weeks?
It's still a fraction of the total PlayStation ownership, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's tiny. Yeah.
It's not like everybody's buying it.
No. But I mean, PlayStation, they made a pretty good business of VR in the previous gen. And obviously they're trying again. I mean, I everyone assumed this thing was going to flop immediately. They'd have to lower the price, yada, yada, yada. But it's pretty good. So. And it's pretty.
I think if you own a PlayStation, it's kind of the easiest way to try VR.
Right? Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yep.
It's cheaper than almost anything else.
I mean, I'm not doing it, but no, you know, it's there if you want it.
I'm not a VR. I'm not a VR bull.
No. No, and there's a lot of people in the Xbox space who are like, I don't understand why Microsoft doesn't do this. Like, are you kidding me? They can barely do a console, guys. Let's stick to the basics here. Yeah. And I think their initiatives in mobile in particular, although sadly very unrealized, is a much bigger and better bet than VR. That's a much bigger market to go after. They're smart to do that.
Yeah.
Just have done it poorly. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. So can I shift to the back of the book, or do you have to do a...
You may now, having done everything we need to do in terms of monetization, except remind people to join Club Twit, $7 a month for ad-free versions of all the shows, including this guy's hands-on Windows, which is only available in the club. If you want to know more, twit.tv/clubtwit. It really is worth the $7, and it's a great way to support what we do. If you like what we do, become a paying member. You won't have to hear ads.
And you get these other shows.
You get all these other shows, which is great. Now it's time for the back of the book, Paul.
So I don't know if you knew this, but Jean-Louis Gasset, former Apple executive, CEO, and co-founder of Bee Inc., has published a book about his experiences in the computer industry. You should buy it, but let me just preface this by saying it's great. It is way too short.
Oh.
It's only 225 pages long. Mm-hmm. And I want people to understand why this matters. This guy came up out of Apple France, and he went to Cupertino. He ran the Mac business after Steve Jobs left the company. This is who he is. This is what he did. He told John Sculley not to go to a trip to China because Steve Jobs was going to try to have a boardroom coup and get him fired and take over as CEO. What happened instead was that Steve Jobs was fired and John Scully remained as CEO. Now you could look back on this years later and say, oh, that was a stupid mistake. Look how successful Steve Jobs was later. But what that ignores is the fact that he was incredibly unsuccessful at Next, and that his experience with that is what made him the person he was later. And that's why he was able to be successful at that time. If he had stayed at Apple, he might have run that thing, probably would have run that thing into the ground, because he certainly did do that with Next. So Jean-Louis Gasset has played an incredible role in our industry. The other thing he might be famous for is his company B was one of two, it was kind of the top choice for a while to become the next version of the Mac OS. And he did lose out to Steve Jobs and Next. Steve Jobs had completely given up on Next Step by that point and had to be convinced to go after this, but it was his way back to Apple, et cetera, et cetera. The thing I remember him for personally is, other than knowing about him from Apple history by reading books, was he, while at B and then after B, had an incredible tech blog. And I thought when I saw he had written this book that that's what this was going to be. It was going to be a collection of his writings. I still to this day follow him online. He publishes on Medium now. And that's how I found out about the book. I read him regularly. So knowing how much I like this guy, and he does a lot of Apple analysis now, which I'm not super interested in, but I just like the guy.
I do read his Monday Note blog. It's quite good. He's very smart.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has the industry bona fides, you know?
Right.
So I bought this book immediately. It's only $7 or $8 on Kindle. Who cares? I finished it like a day. I was like, what happened? What is this? And to give you an idea of how short it is, I just described how he stopped John Scully from going to China. This is one of the most pivotal moments in personal computing history ever. It's up there with the guys from IBM not getting to digital research and then going to Microsoft as plan B. It's up there with Microsoft choosing to license MS-DOS but not sell it to IBM, right, and establishing them as an OS platform company. It is one of the most important moments in history in the computer industry. One paragraph in the book.
Wow.
One paragraph.
Wow.
I would give anything to sit down with this guy and write the proper version of this book, which should be 1,000 pages long, and really go into these events.
Interesting.
Because he was there for a lot of very interesting stuff. It's a good book. It's worth reading.
When he was Apple, his speechwriter is a friend of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She wrote all his speeches, and she's a very good writer. Maybe she.
What's her name?
Her name is Jenny Abbey. He needed her to write his book, maybe. Maybe that's, he just doesn't like
it. I still think you should read it. I think a lot of people don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
BOS was incredible.
Oh, I agree.
In fact, BOS.
Think of it as the OS that got away, you know, that this is.
It was inspired by the Amiga in the sense that they went with they did a multiprocessor system. I don't know if people remember this. The first, they had a B-box hardware that
they did
had
hardware.
It wasn't PowerPC. The first version was something else. It was something different, but they eventually went PowerPC. And of course, then they ported to Intel and blah, 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 whatever. But that's the B, like the Amiga, is one of those great could have been, should have been kind of stories in the industry.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Incredible. Just incredible.
There is a port of the BOS called Haiku, which is still around, but I don't think it really lives up to it.
You could run a Mega OS if you wanted to do, but or you could just get automatically. If it's sad, because I wish this stuff had happened.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's called Grateful Gate: 50 Years of Apple and Other Tech Adventures. I don't think enough people know about this man and should look him up.
I'm ordering it now on my new Kindle Scribe.
Yep. You'll finish it before I'm done with the app pick. So it's really short.
That's sad. Usually I say books are too long, but oh well.
I know. No, not this one. I couldn't believe I finished. I was like, wait, what happened here? I'm like,
Is it over? Does he at least cover everything? I mean, he covers the whole story, right? He isn't okay.
Yeah, but it's like I said, one paragraph for that event. That event was an entire chapter, you know?
And then John Scully wished to go to China, but I said no. And he stopped.
Well, John Scully wrote an autobiography. I think it was called Odyssey. There are a bunch of Apple books from that period where his story is told in much more detail. You should read those too. But, you know.
All right. I will.
I just can't believe it. I'm sure his attitude was like, the story's already been told. It's like, dude.
He's humble. Maybe he's a humble guy, and he just
he's not a humble guy. He's French. he's not humble, but
grateful geek. 50 years of Apple and other tech adventures.
I don't know.
With one page per year by Jean-Louis Gasset.
Really, pretty much. I mean, it's too bad. Anyway, do buy it. He's a good guy. Epic of the week is sounds like it's coming out of left field a little bit, but if you want to test that new Microsoft Edge UI, you need to get the beta version of Microsoft Edge. That's how you get it. It will be on stable, as I call it, next month, right? So probably on Patch Tuesday. I don't know the exact day, but somewhere around the 8th-ish, I think. So if you don't want to wait, just download the Edge beta channel version and you can get the new UI and some other new features, but the new UI for sure. If you are going to use Edge, I mentioned this, you asked me like what's wrong with Edge. The biggest thing is privacy and tracking. Definitely install Privacy Badger and AdBlock Plus. You can get them from Chrome, the Chrome web store. You can get them from the, I think it's called the Edge add-on store. It doesn't matter where you get them. They're all compatible. So don't dare use this browser without getting external tracking protection.
I guess because it's a Chromium, I could install uBlock Origin.
Yep, that works too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I use the EFF has that Cover Your Tracks site, and if you go to it with Edge out of the box, you get a bunch of red flags. It doesn't stop anything. Wow. It doesn't stop a thing. You don't have a unique fingerprint. Doesn't stop blockers. Doesn't third party. Nothing. It doesn't block anything. But if you install Privacy Badger and AdBlock Plus, you'll be up all green. It's all good. And you should.
Okay.
But don't use Edge. Seriously. You're better than
that. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for Windows Weekly for this week. We started with about an hour and a half of the keynote, which you can get at twit.tv/news. And honestly, I think I would say skip to the very end with Steve Battiche, but maybe watch Panos first for the humor of it. And Zsa was okay. Zsa was very corporate-y.
I said this at the time. My intent was not to mock or make fun of somebody or whatever. I find it really hard to watch him on the best of times.
Panos?
It became very clear that it almost felt unrehearsed. And I think his fire was taken. I think they took the content. I think
it was the worst of Panos. You know? It was all the stuff we don't like about Panos without any of the meat.
I mean, I don't think it's his fault entirely, although I don't think he's a good speaker at all. But Stevie Battiche, man, turned that around. It's worth definitely watch that part of it.
That's the best part. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Well worth watching the end. And our commentary, of course, as usual, crystalline in its purity of thought.
Yep. Yep. I mean, between that show and this show, in many ways, this shortest version of Windows Weekly is really the longest version.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. That's his blog. His newest book is Windows Everywhere, kind of a history of Windows from a developer's perspective, which is fascinating.
I can tell you, I would have given more than a paragraph to the Apple Steve Jobs thing. I mean,
that's
a chapter. You got to learn how to write a book, buddy. Come on.
He needs a ghostwriter, Paul. You can volunteer.
I'm here for him. I would do it.
Leanpub.com to get Windows Everywhere. Leanpub.com. You choose your own price. He also has the field guide to Windows 11, which is constantly updated. So that is really a great way to get it. So you get the updates as well. Leanpub.com includes Windows 10. Of course, Richard Campbell, who is no longer with us.
Hold on.
Only temporarily.
Careful.
He will be back next week, but you can catch him.
Loss of Richard Campbell, who will be here next week.
He'll be here next week. We only lost him for a few minutes with more brown liquor and lots more Windows news. If you want to watch us do it live, we do it right around 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC of a Wednesday. Tune in. Watch it live at live.twit.tv. There's audio or video, so you could listen live too. And if you're doing that, chat live at irc.twit.tv, or if you're a club member in the Club Twit Discord. And by the way, if you're in the club and you're in the Discord, you can sign up to get notifications. I don't ever mention this, but you can sign up to get notifications when a show starts. And we try to do that so that you can be, you know, chatting in the Discord or wherever, and you'll get a little notification saying, okay, Windows Weekly, let's go. And you can go right into the Windows Weekly section. That's one of the many, many benefits of Discord. I really like Discord as a platform. Let's see, what else? Oh, after the fact, you can get copies of the show at our website, twit.tv/WW. Paul, of course, always links to it on therot.com. Paul also does, I should mention, I never mentioned this, a daily show with Brad Sams every morning, First Ring Daily. So if you want to get like your daily hit of Windows News and Surratt.
You're like two idiots making fun of each other for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's a quickie. It's an easy way to start the day. Yeah. I think worth subscribing to in addition to Windows Weekly. So you've got something, you know, on your way to work, and then you can have something on the way home or that kind of thing. What else? We are on YouTube. There's a YouTube channel. If you go to twit.tv/WW, you'll see a link to that. You'll also see links to major podcast players. You can subscribe by clicking the link or using the RSS feed, or easiest, search for Windows Weekly in your podcast directory and you'll find it. And you can subscribe and get it automatically as soon as it's ready. We have audio and video of this show and all of our shows. Paul, thank you. Have a great week.
Yeah, you too.
You going to Mexico soon?
Yeah, assuming that volcano doesn't destroy the city.
Yeah.
Or prevent air flights, I guess, would be the bigger issue. July 6th.
Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Good. So you'll be here for the 4th of July, and then it's off to old Mexico. Thanks, Paul. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Thanks. Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club Twit. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club Twit Discord, a great clubhouse for Twit listeners. And finally, the Twit Plus feed with shows like Stacy's Book Club, The Untitled Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support.